Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and builds specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Buck's First Thoughts, the news you need to get through your day in 45 minutes. Make sure you subscribe on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.
He was the hero of the pandemic. You should remember that. And that should be something that you recall here. Governor Cuomo was the person that they pointed to as the example. He was the guy that everybody else was supposed to follow in his footsteps when it came to the handling of COVID-19. No other politician received the level of praise heaped upon Andrew Cuomo for his COVID leadership. Remember, President Biden said he was the gold standard in fighting the disease. Back in July, Dr. Fauci said that Cuomo did it correctly, bringing down the curve in New York. Months later, Cuomo even said that he and Fauci could join up to be the Pacino and De Niro of COVID vaccination public service announcements. Cuomo seemed to enjoy his new celebrity status, as did Fauci, by the way. Never shy about getting in front of a camera, little totalitarian Papa Smurf that he is. Cuomo even wrote a book, American Crisis, Leadership Lessons from the COVID-19 Pandemic. It came out in the summer of 2020. COVID was still really ravaging a lot of the country at that point. New York was at a low point, but the Sun Belt was getting hit pretty hard. And as we know, it was before the second wave. Didn't matter. Cuomo was telling a story that the libs wanted to hear. He even won an Emmy for his daily press conference. Remember that? And during the awards ceremony, you had all these celebrities like Spike Lee, Ben Stiller, and Rosie Perez slobbering praise all over the governor. A term popped up for a while last summer, Cuomo sexuals, to reference his alleged appeal. There was even chatter around the possibility of his late entry into the presidential field while the Democrat primary was still going on. Now we have proof it was all a front. Cuomo not only failed to show heroic leadership during the pandemic, he may well be responsible for the single most disastrous decision of the entire ordeal. His arrogance and monumental stupidity could have condemned hundreds, if not thousands, of high-risk seniors to die unnecessarily from COVID in nursing homes. Cuomo's record, even apart from the nursing home disaster, speaks for itself. Over 15,000 seniors dead in the roughly 600 nursing homes of New York State. Overall, New York has the second highest COVID fatality rate per 100,000 residents of any state in America, second only to New Jersey. To make matters worse, Cuomo tried to cover up the nursing home data. The governor of New York didn't want the American people knowing what an abject disaster he had caused. So he hid it from us, which we now know only because his top aide, Melissa DeRosa, let it slip on that private phone call. They intentionally undercounted deaths by 50% because they didn't want Trump and the DOJ to know what happened during the election season. Cuomo and his team hid the truth from the people of New York and from the country. Why would he do that if there was nothing to hide? The governor currently claims it was only staffers at the nursing home who brought the virus into facilities. That's a very convenient explanation, isn't it? And he's lied on the issue so many times, he has sacrificed all credibility. The whole country is now seeing that Cuomo, as a Democrat governor, was an abject failure on COVID-19 response, but was somehow celebrated in the media for doing a great job. His anti-Trumpness, as you know, was all that really mattered. Not his bullying, poor decision-making, or catastrophic failure by the numbers. There's a lesson here, but the Democrats refuse to learn it. Cuomo denies it, and New York and the rest of the country will suffer more as a result. Because we can't learn the lessons. We can't actually make better decisions going forward if we can't know what has worked and what has failed up to this point. You might be wondering, does Governor Cuomo actually take any responsibility for this? Well, this is perfect. He does indeed, insofar as he accepts responsibility for you thinking he's responsible. He wants to apologize if you have any hurt feelings that you should not have, but he feels badly for you, right? This is a version of I want to apologize to anybody who was offended by my remarks, not ever saying that the remarks. He actually goes beyond that, saying my inoffensive remarks, I will apologize if they offended you, even though they're inoffensive. This is the kind of gaslighting, the kind of passive aggressive manipulation you should expect from Governor Cuomo. Play three.
In retrospect, we should have prioritized providing more information. I get the operational demand. I don't like to second guess my team. They were all working 24 hours a day. You know, remember where this was? You're in the middle of hell during this time. No excuses. We should not have created the void. We should have done a better job in providing information. We should have done a better job of knocking down the disinformation. You'd never knock down all these conspiracy theories, the political conspiracy theories, because they generate 10 a day. But we should have done a better job of providing as much information as we could, as quickly as we could. And we should have done a better job on that. Yes. And no excuses. I accept responsibility for that. I am in charge. I take responsibility. We should have provided more information faster. We were too focused on doing the job and addressing the crisis of the moment, and we did not do a good enough job in providing information. I take total responsibility for that.
He takes responsibility, you see, for the public's ignorance of what a great job he was doing. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. He accepts the full weight and burden of the general public's incorrect belief that he messed up. He's sorry, in essence, that he did not explain better to us how awesome he is. That's on him. I mean, this guy, it's amazing. You know, you almost have to marvel at it. To be so full of crap, to be so dishonest, to be such an incompetent, vain bully. Getting his Emmy, writing his book. Why did his top aide say that they were hiding data from Trump and the DOJ during the election? Oh, no, because they didn't want Trump to find out what a great job he had done, I guess. They didn't want the Department of Justice, while there was a Republican president, getting any insight into just what had happened in the nursing homes in New York. And remember this, even if what he's saying now, his new story is that it's, well, here, that was all the staff, the 9,000 seniors that he sent into nursing homes, the 9,000 seniors he sent into nursing homes who were COVID positive, they weren't a risk for some reason. We can't explain that through science, of course. But the staff walking in was the only reason there were all these deaths. Play two.
We have 613 nursing homes in the state. 365 received a person from a hospital. Of the 365 that received a person from this March 25th guidance, which was then superseded in May, 98% of those 365 already had COVID in their hot facility. COVID did not get into the nursing homes by people coming from hospitals. COVID got into the nursing homes by staff walking into the nursing home when we didn't even know we had COVID. Staff walking into a nursing home, even though they were asymptomatic, because the national experts all told us you could only spread COVID if you had symptoms. And they were wrong. COVID may have been brought into a nursing home because visitors brought it in and didn't know they were contagious, because the guidance was you can only be contagious if you have symptoms, if you're sneezing, if you're coughing. That turned out to be wrong.
You know what else we should look at here? The science. Let's do that for a moment. He's claiming that because there was COVID in these nursing homes, it didn't matter if there were additional people with COVID sent into the nursing homes. Does that make sense to any of you? Let's say you got a nursing home, 500 people there. You have five staff members who all have COVID and they're starting to spread it. Would it make things worse if you put 15 seniors with COVID in the mix too? Yes, it would. So the claim that it was only staffers, which is what he's saying, that's just absurd. But it doesn't matter. It works, doesn't it? People will listen to him. They just look at this guy and they say he has such a command of the facts and he's just such a great Democrat. He really helped us beat Trump. People still believe this guy. That's what's so terrifying. And in California, they've at least woken up to the fact that Newsom is a flimsy phony. But in New York, there are people that cling to this vision of Andrew Cuomo, perhaps because of his dad, Mario, because, you know, the Cuomos, New York, the power, all this stuff. They still believe this guy is not the worst governor in America, and they're just delusional at this point.
This is the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Follow Buck on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Who's the real hero of the COVID-19 pandemic? If you're looking for a leader, looking for an elected official who did what was necessary, who stepped up, who showed courage and grit and determination, it's not Andrew Cuomo. Just look at the numbers. Look at the record. Can't argue with what we can see right in front of our faces. New York having the second worst per capita COVID deaths in America of any state after New Jersey. And remember, New Jersey and New York essentially share New York City. They're right next to each other. So that's why it's really just the whole New York metro area was the worst single COVID disaster per capita anywhere in the country, even still to this day. But we could compare other places as well to get a better sense of who was doing a good job and who wasn't. Governor Ron DeSantis, on the issue of nursing homes, he has a very different take. Now, let's understand. Governor Cuomo says there was no problem. His executive order, which is a matter of public record, his executive order about nursing homes didn't do anything, was no problem, nothing to see here, don't worry about it. That's his claim now. There was never a lack of beds. There was never any infection. It didn't lead to any problems. Forget about that phone call that just came out a week ago, too, where one of his top aides said, no, we had to cover this up because the Trump Republicans were going to just bash us with this because it was such a catastrophic failure. Forget about what you know. Listen to Cuomo. That's the idea. Or you could listen to Governor Ron DeSantis. While Cuomo's saying that the issue of hospital beds and seniors in the nursing homes was no issue at all. Ron DeSantis points out that they just found a better way to handle this. Here he is, the governor of Florida, play 10.
Well, look, Tucker, we in Florida, we had the exact opposite order. We said you can't, a hospital, send a COVID positive nursing home resident back into the nursing home because that is the most vulnerable population. And you obviously would put them in serious risk. But what we also did after the first few weeks, we established COVID only nursing units. So if you had somebody test positive at a nursing home, they could be safely transferred and isolated, recover, then go back so that the other residents were protected. So we really viewed that as the tip of the spear when you're dealing with COVID, because the fact of the matter is it's not killing a lot of 18-year-olds. It is tending to kill people who are very elderly and very, very ill.
Notice what he says here. It's so obvious, isn't it? Seniors are at the greatest risk by far from COVID-19. Over 65, it goes up tremendously, your risk from COVID-19, as you all listen to this know. If you were devising a strategy to spread COVID to the high-risk population, sending anyone, never mind even just seniors, anyone you knew to have COVID-19 back into a community of senior citizens, that would have to be at the very top of the list. If you were trying to think of a way to spread this disease in the most catastrophic and lethal fashion, you know, if you were trying to, I'm being honest with you, if you were trying to weaponize COVID, sending people with COVID into nursing homes, and anyone, seniors, staff, anybody, was probably the single most dangerous thing you could do. And Governor DeSantis says that would have been crazy, so we didn't do that. We kept people in a hospital setting. Remember, in a nursing home, there are communal areas. There are people that are they're passing each other, you know, in the hallways. They're using the same elevators. You know, it's a confined space indoors. They're not outside a lot. People have weakened immune systems. Some of them are going to have very high viral loads they're carrying around because their body can't handle the virus. This is obvious stuff. I mean, Cuomo can sit around as much as he wants and say, oh, but it all came from the people who went into the nursing homes who were staff, not from the seniors. How could anyone believe that? I'm not saying there weren't staffers that spread it perhaps considerably more or that wasn't really bad as well. It was. But, you know, those of us who have been saying all along, defend the nursing homes, take extreme precautions and measures for senior citizens, and let everybody else basically deal with this thing with minimal mitigation measures and precautions, I think we've all been proven far more wise than the people like Cuomo who took this let's lock down all of society approach. Remember, the fundamental flaw in the lockdown strategies that we've seen in these states across the country is that they're not really lockdown, right? It's a partial lockdown. So you really get all the drawback and none of the benefits. People aren't told they have to stay in their homes for 2 weeks at a time. Not really. People still are going out. They're going to offices. There's essential workers. They're going to the store. They're buying not just food. They're buying, you know, products at big box stores. And so the virus just keeps spreading. But businesses get destroyed. Jobs go away. Lives are ruined. That all happens, too. Here we are. Watching as they try to rewrite this history. Because here's what America is waking up to right now. I mean, I know you and I have known this all along, but a lot of other Americans are just starting to figure this out. Biden and his team are a bunch of buffoons. They don't know how to fix this. They didn't have some great plan. And actually, they've lied a lot about it. They've lied about where we are with the vaccinations and what the status of it was when it was handed over to the Biden administration. They've lied about how they have some great plan to shut down. Remember Biden's line, I'm going to shut down the virus. I'm not going to shut down the economy. How's that going so far? We're a month in. Does it feel like the virus was shut down by Biden? I'm glad he appears on TV wearing his mask all the time. Oh, yeah, that's really, he's already vaccinated. This has gone so off the rails. People are so propagandized to and so politicized, they can't think straight anymore. We need to get back to rationality here. We need to just get back to earth and forget about all this crazy stuff that the lockdown libs have been saying.
More Than a Movie is back with season two of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. On Purpose is dedicated to helping you be happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how he got comfortable with fear, navigating the changes in relationships, and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern. This conversation shows a never-seen-before side to Orlando Bloom and his unique life journey.
I think we all struggle sometimes to really deeply believe that we are enough, that we're valued, that we're valuable. You know, we're imprinted by our parents from the age of 0 to 7, right? Mm. I'm constantly trying to go, like, how do I detach from this idea of, is that my baggage? It doesn't look like my baggage. I mean, I know, okay, that's mine. Let's unpack that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been
juicy.
The podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
You're in the Freedom Hut. Thanks for listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Get the latest from Buck at BuckSexton.com.
What we are finding from the science-based literature is that there is more spread that is happening in the community when schools are not open than when schools are open. So we certainly want to make sure that there is limited to no transmission of disease in our schools. And of course, we are managing all sorts of risks. So if schools are closed, there's lots of other risks. That is risks to food insecurity and many of the other things that Donna has mentioned, the lack of education, educational milestones being missed. So many other things that we have to think about in the risk. So really what we're trying to do is make sure that there is limited to no transmission in the schools. And we believe with the strategies that we have put forward that there will be limited to no transmission in the schools if they are followed.
Worse outside of the classroom than inside the classroom. I want to be very clear here. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky says there is more spread when schools are not open than when schools are open. You're going to see more of this as the data becomes increasingly widespread and it becomes obvious for anybody who's looking at it. Some of the things that they have done here to deal with COVID have actually just made everything worse. And they don't want to admit that, of course, because they were telling us that they were so smart and this is the CDC and they know what they're doing. She's straight up telling you, the CDC director saying, look, there's more COVID spread in the community when schools are closed than when schools are open. Now, there are a lot of reasons, a lot of A lot of theorizing we could do about that. Maybe it has to do with just people getting out of the home more, you know, taking the kids to and from school. Maybe it's getting fresh air and vitamin D and the boost in the immune system that people get from being more mobile. I mean, really, for a disease like this, to essentially lock everyone at home, except for the occasional transmission risk of being indoors with other strangers, and then make sure they keep going home and they don't get outside, they're not living their lives, their immune system is suppressed. There's so much here that has been wrong. There's so much here that has been problematic. You know, back in the day, they were telling us that if only we listened to them, we would stop the virus. And now we've all seen that was absolutely not true. There was never any real hope that we were going to stop this virus. But that was a false hope. A false hope that they shared with everybody. And it's a false hope that has resulted in tremendous bad decision making. I mean, really awful decision making on a widespread basis. Why are schools still closed in so many places? Why do Democrats in blue strongholds insist on keeping public schools closed? Well, here's a man who in his state did not close schools, and he knows exactly what's going on. Play 11.
The school reopening plan that makes the most sense, if you want to open schools, open them. Open the door. Let them come in and let them learn. And the only reason that that is not happening across this country, like it is in Florida, like it is in a handful of other states, it's one reason and one reason only. Because the Democratic Party puts the interests of education unions and special interests ahead of the well-being of our children and of our families. These kids have been out of school in parts of this country for almost a year. And if you follow that CDC guidance, they will not go back in this school year, and they may not even go back in the fall. That is a disgrace. That is not science. That is putting politics ahead of what's right for kids. That is putting politics and special interests ahead of what the evidence and observed experience says. So we're better off as a result of giving parents and kids that opportunity. I can tell you, I cannot go out without a parent coming up to me saying how much better it is that their child's able to go to school. And so we're not looking back. We're going to continue going forward.
There was never real cause to shut the schools down. It was always based in bad decision making, and it was based in having the wrong priorities. The teachers' unions love this, the whole situation. I mean, they're able to make demands, break their contracts. They're breaking their contracts in places. Hey, it's safe for you to go back in. And they're saying, no, we're not going back in. And we're not going to send the National Guard to teachers' homes and drag them into the classroom, right? So they're just saying, no, I'm not going to do it. They know they're not all going to get fired because the unions are too powerful. That's where we are. That's what's actually happening here. And for anyone who says, oh, the teachers, so many people have enabled this whiny, crybaby nonsense. Oh, the teachers are scared. Really? There are people that have been working in grocery stores, delivering mail, showing up, you know, doing their jobs in New York City, the worst hit place by the pandemic in the whole country. And I've been seeing them for a year now. They've been doing this and they do their jobs, because if they didn't show up, they'd get replaced. They'd get fired. But they show up and do their jobs. Teachers don't have to. Oh, I can't handle it. Look, if you're a teacher that's at high risk, there should be accommodations made for that. I don't want 70-year-olds going into the classroom. Fine. How many 70-year-old teachers do you really think are in the public school system? I'm not saying there aren't any, but not that many. And couldn't we just we could be reasonable and handle all of this. We could be reasonable and make better decisions all across the board. What we can't do is continue to have this game where we pass along the decision making to bureaucrats who then essentially pass it back to us whenever there's a hard call to be made. The Democrats will say, we have to listen to the science. Let's listen to the CDC. You notice the CDC, Dr. Fauci, won't come out and make declarative statements about things that Democrats don't want to hear. You know, he'll say now, wear a mask. but he won't say open the schools today. Today. Why not? He won't say we never should have closed the schools. Is there any reason for this? Is there any real problem that we're not aware of? No. When it becomes a judgment call, they say they're giving guidance. That's what it turns into. We have guidance to share. Well, that means that somebody else has to make the decisions. That means somebody else has to be in charge here. And yet, the moment that we start to criticize the people in charge, they just keep passing this back and forth. I say, why is Gavin Newsom doing what he's doing? He says, well, we're following the CDC guidance. I go to the CDC and I say, hey, CDC, well, what the heck? What's going on here? They say, oh, well, we're just giving guidance. It's Gavin Newsom's call. You see, that's how this game has been played the whole time. So no one's responsible for the bad decision making, but no one's allowed to question the bad decision making either. There's no accountability for it. This is bureaucracy 101. Do what they tell you to do, and no one's actually telling you to do it. Therefore, nobody can really be challenged or held accountable for it. And I know that that's like a brain teaser. It doesn't really make any sense. That's exactly what's happening. That's what's happening. You know, there are school districts where they're saying that every teacher has to be vaccinated because, you know, or else they won't open schools. What's fascinating is they've already started to say in a couple places where they had got that agreement. What do you think the next move was? Once the school district said, you know what, we will actually vaccinate the teachers. Then the unions go, you know, I think we're also going to kind of need you to vaccinate all the kids, too. Now you're going to have kids vaccinated as well. How long do you think that's going to take? Look, I get it. People have gotten used to a very quiet, comfortable lifestyle. You don't have to show up, be in a classroom, deal with the noise. Deal with all that. And I know some teachers miss their kids and want to get back to their kids. And they think this is horrible. And I know that. But for the teachers unions, they're there to represent the perks and the financial interests of adults. They are not there in any way, shape or form for the benefit of children. And it's becoming very obvious. And they control far too much of the Democrat Party's decision making. That's really where we are. That's what's actually going on here. It's obvious for anyone to see. All you have to do is just look and just tell the truth. You can see this. You can see this. Speaking of telling the truth, you know who doesn't do that? Kamala Harris about the vaccine situation. They got to keep the bar very low for this Biden administration. That's not a surprise, is it?
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What the guidelines are saying, that there are a number of things that you can mitigate to make it safer, regardless of what level you're in. Obviously, you know, the blue, yellow, orange, yeah. Red zone, and you're absolutely correct that if you look at the country, a considerable proportion are in that zone where you really have to be careful because that is a higher risk. But what the guidelines are saying is that there are a number of things that people are asking for help and guidance of what can we do to make this more safe. And you saw in them, there's masking, there's distancing, there's contact tracing, there's cleansing of the areas, but there's also vaccination of the teachers. Yeah. And I think that's important. And it's become clear that that's not a sine qua non. I mean, you can't say we're not going to open any schools unless all the teachers get vaccinated. It would be very helpful, and all of us are very empathetic and want the teachers to get vaccinated. They are a priority when it comes to essential personnel, but we think we can move forward as we vaccinate teachers, but it doesn't have to be that if they're not vaccinated, then you don't open the school. So I think hopefully that clarifies it a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it's really clarified. Oh, it's so clear now. It's clarified. So there's a whole lot of things you can do. You don't have to do any one of them. You should do most of them. Best if you do all of them. But if you miss one or two, well, we'll leave that up to you. Okay, so what does that mean? That's Fauciism for you in a nutshell. There you have it. You know, there's cleaning, there's air quality, there's masks, there's distance, there's this, there's that, there's... There's vaccines for some, not all, maybe, kind of, yes, no, maybe so. Well, which one is it? They keep saying there's guidance. It's really guidelines. Like, here's some general thoughts. Go have your fun. Go do your thing. Good luck, America. You say, well, hold on. We're always told that politicians have to listen to the CDC. But you see, the CDC keeps saying, well, here's some general stuff. This is ultimately about policy and about risk tolerance. That's the heart of the whole matter. All this other stuff, blah, 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 we're going to do this and that and all these different changes and everything. What is acceptable risk for society? And we are returning to conversations now that some of us were trying to have at the beginning of the pandemic, where a zero risk toleration in different parts of our society is a recipe for totalitarian madness. Saying it in the very beginning, you know, and I would say, why can't we make the speed limit 10 miles an hour? It would save thousands of lives, because we decide that with the, you know, hundreds of millions of car trips going on all the time, you know, we're all running a risk. Why would you ever get in an airplane knowing that an airplane can crash? You're running a risk. Now, airplane crashes are actually very, very rare now, but that used to be less rare. You know, why would you ever, take any pharmaceutical? There's always a risk. You can paralyze yourself by unreasonable risk standards. And that's what we've done as a society, as a country. That's where we are now. People have become so hypersensitive over the issue. Oh, my gosh, COVID. I mean, I've had lots of people in my life have COVID, people that I've been in very close contact with. Lots of people I know have had COVID. You know, I mean, I know everyone says this. I think I already had COVID very early in the pandemic. But, you know, people all over the place have been getting this thing. And we're suffering through all this bad policy under the promise that it's going to protect us. Does anyone feel like it's really protected them? Anyone really feel like this has had the intended result? We have to get to a point where we say, life is not perfect. I cannot control everything. I know there are things that can go wrong, but I am making a conscious decision to accept that and to go forward with that possibility and to still function as a reasonable, rational person. That's what Fauci really needs to do if he wanted to be helpful, which he doesn't, would be to sit down and say, look, everybody, there's no perfect answers here. You know, you know what the mitigations are, and, you know, they've kind of helped. Well, they would say they've helped a lot. I mean, I think that's crazy, but they'd say that, you know, they've helped, but we really got to get people back out there. That's the way we got to go. And some of us aren't going to make it, but some of us don't make it all the time anyway. That's what happens. That's life. You know, that's what actually has to be said. They won't say that. They will not say that. You know? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's all about acceptable risk tolerance. I'll never forget when I got sat down by one of my senior managers at the CIA before I went. He's like, where you're going? He's like, you're probably going to be okay. He's like, you're not a combatant. You're not a door kicker. You know, you're not wearing the uniform. So, but you know, you're going to be carrying weapons and you're going to be in a war zone. And he's like, you should just know before you do this, you could die. And that's a thing that could happen. You could die doing this. I'll never forget. He sat me down, talked to me about this. And I looked at him and I was like, I appreciate that. And I understand. And I'm going, you know, because I thought it was not only acceptable risk for me, I couldn't live with myself considering that there were so many other people in the military specifically who were taking such bigger risks, you know, orders of magnitude bigger risk every day. And I was just some guy running around dressed like I was on a camping trip, trying not to get kidnapped by Al-Qaeda or something and trying to help out military. My point here just being how I was going to live in fear of trying to serve when my service was so much less risky than those who were out there every day outside the wire. Come on. Right. At some point, you got to make these calculations. At some point, you got to say to yourself, you know, I'm rolling. Life is always rolling the dice. And as a society, what has happened to us, Fauciism has created the false perception that they can save you from a bad roll of the dice if you give them all your liberty, give them all the authority they need. They'll give you perfect security. This is a lie, and it's destructive. And we are dealing with the consequences of this now every day, and it's not just going to go away. We have to make it stop.
This is Buck's First Thoughts, the news you need to get through your day in 45 minutes. Make sure you subscribe on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Harsanyi time. Our friend David Harsanyi from National Review in the mix with us once again, nationalreview.com for his latest. David, great to have you.
Always great to be here. Thank you.
So I think people are starting to see, when I say people, I mean those who are observing with some degree of honesty. I can't say impartiality, but just taking objective fact in as such. The Biden administration is not some team of genius experts with a great plan to end the pandemic, to boost the economy tremendously, to get everybody back to work. In fact, they're doing a lot of petty ideological stuff and messing up on some of the more important day-to-day stuff.
Right. I think a lot of that is a function of partisanship in the sense that Biden didn't really have to come up with a plan or make any kind of really coherent argument other than not being Trump, other than saying Trump had failed, other than saying Trump had killed people, frankly. And now we see, you know, with the vaccines. I mean, I think actually we're doing a good job in general, but I don't think that that has anything to do with Biden. There was no special plan to change the trajectory of coronavirus. There was no special plan to get the economy on its feet. You saw the trial balloon, I'm sure, of the Biden administration talking about locking down Florida. We're still pretending Florida has done a bad job. There's a lot of partisanship, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and I feel like the issue of schools, we finally stumbled upon something where the Democrats, all the talking points, all the propaganda, they can't get away from this one. I mean, they've had the CDC director say, yeah, I mean, you don't need to be vaccinated for all that. You don't have to have all the teachers vaccinated for school to be back in action. And then you turn around and you say, oh, well, actually, she was speaking in her private capacity. And you have, okay, well, schools should be open safely. They keep throwing in this safely at the end. And then everyone says, well, what does that mean? I mean, if it means every public school in America gets some new, you know, below a certain micron ventilation system for the entire school, that's going to, I mean, people are actually talking about this, David. I'm like, so that means school never actually opens, folks. That's what safely means.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that Democrats, or many words that Democrats use that is just are open-ended. Safely is one of them. We can never safely do anything at some, you know, it can never be totally safe. Schools have always been safe to open, as far as I know. I'm not a scientist, but all the data and all the studies show that schools are not big spreaders, or they're almost not, don't spread it at all. So obviously they're captured by the teachers' unions, and it's a political thing, just like anything else. Following the science is not science is another open-ended thing where you just get to do whatever your Democrats say, but they don't follow the science any more than anyone else. If we were really trying to follow the science, we'd look at Florida and see what they were doing and follow what they're doing. But we don't do that. We follow what the Chicago's teachers union says we should do. And, you know, it's just a bunch of phonies. I don't know how else to say it. And
well, I just feel like this has been the problem, David.
It's not going to change.
This has been the problem all along. As you point out, follow the science has been essentially a version of obey. We're going to make you do this. We're going to say it's about the science, but it's really not. I mean, there's a comparison going around now of California and Florida. And I think it's a very apt comparison because you have two states with roughly similar weather, because that does factor into this, right? States with longer, colder seasons, maybe you have two states with large populations. I know California is about twice the size, but still large population states with major urban centers and serious population density. And one place, California, went into the longest, really, and strictest lockdowns of any state in America. I mean, certainly right up there with the top two or three. And another one, Florida, never locked down. And on all the data, on a per capita, so adjusted for the actual numbers, Florida did better than California. So, and I keep pointing out to people, it's not like what California has done was without consequence. This isn't like, you know, a chocolate or vanilla situation where pick whatever you like. What California did hurt a lot of people. So they got a worse outcome, and they also created this unnecessary cost from all the lockdowns. And it just feels to me, David, like no matter how clear the data is at this point, there are people who they will just never admit it. They were so convinced that they were so smart because they listened to the science. And now they realize, oh, maybe Fauci isn't a genius.
Yeah, no, but they keep pretending that Florida lied about its numbers, or they just pretend that Cuomo did a good job. Now that's turned around a bit, but I just saw a poll today. I mean, most people, you know, the polls haven't changed. Cuomo's still beloved by New Yorkers, which is to me just insanity. Just it seems to me that it's just an issue of partisanship that people just that's what they care about now. I don't know how else to put it. But by any quantifiable number, Florida has done better. And all the things you mentioned are true. But more than that, they have an older, more susceptible population as well. In Florida, they have, you know, their population skews.
That's really important, especially with the California comparison, because California has an unusually young population. For a state.
So all of those things have to be taken into account. But when you I look at the European numbers, you know, you have Sweden, which didn't really lock down, and their numbers are basically the same as all, like everyone like loves to make these lists where this country has more deaths and this country has less deaths. But in Western world, all the countries are essentially in the same area, right? There might be weather differences or kind of societal differences that changed those numbers. But there wasn't, I just don't think that there was much we could do. But what we did do was nearly destroy our economy. I think the reverberations of what we did socially with the masks and everything else that we do and the distancing, but also the economic side, are going to be felt for a long time. And, you know, I'm not trying to diminish the deaths that have happened, but I'm saying that there are trade-offs, and Democrats never want to talk about the trade-offs to what you do. They just want you to look at one thing. You know, it's like with global warming or climate change, just because I'm reading Bill Gates's new book on it, is that, you know, he keeps talking about science, but he never talks about the trade-offs. Yes, science might say it's getting warmer, but you want to destroy modernity to stop it. That is not science, but it is a fact, right? And it's more important, and people suffer, and you don't care about that because you're so, you know, you're so focused and obsessed about some number that science tells you. And one last quick thing. You are never allowed to challenge the science, which is not what science is either. And that has been driving me crazy this whole time. You're not even allowed to be skeptical about it. They will take your YouTube page down. They will get you off Twitter. And I think that is a really destructive part of this as well that we're going to have to keep living with.
Yeah, it's really lab coat authoritarianism. That's what we have been suffering from, because an actual scientist or actual science would say, you don't believe this? You know, let's test it. Let's see. We'll show you the results. We'll show you the results again. Let's keep doing it. You have a different theory? Let's test that theory. All right, people will say things, and they would say things to me even during the pandemic, although now they back off a little bit because I was right about schools. I called double masking. I was right about N95 masks. There's a number of things here where there's a written record now, and I say, huh, why is it that these things were knowable in advance without actually running these tests? So, you know, I'm kind of strutting my stuff a little bit sometimes, David. But
what if I don't believe it? Do I have to? I mean, what if I don't believe it? Why do I have to believe everything everyone tells me? And why am I not allowed to talk about things I don't believe in? I don't even understand what gives the power.
My point is that they'll say to me, well, what do you not, you know, OK, fine, sure. You have your own opinion about gravity. Right. And that's supposed to be some great comeback or some great put down or whatever. And I'll say, no. Let's go test gravity. And no man of science would say you're not allowed to test gravity. You're not allowed to see if it actually works, right? I mean, I know that's a simplification, but this is what they do.
No. If someone found a theory that disproved gravity, I mean, we give it a look, right? I mean, I'm sure it could be debunked or whatever. But this isn't so simple as you mean. There's a million moving parts to this, and they've been consistently wrong about what would happen. And that's why, you know, I'm not diminishing science. I'm diminishing your theories, because not everything is settled science. And certainly we didn't know anything about coronavirus. I mean, Fauci was saying all kinds of stuff that never came true, that was completely wrong. And I'm not allowed to say anything negative about him on Twitter.
No, I think the social media companies are appalling. I think what they've done has been so damaging to the country, because they really are now, especially for news media, they're the public square. and, you know, ideas can go viral and people can get a lot of attention, and that they would shut down policy decisions. I mean, I get dinged on platforms all the time. I've been dinged for making jokes even about it. I mean, you can't even, you, if you say anything that pokes fun at Fauciism or that undermines it or that even asks a question that's a little too pointed, you get this little CDC link at the bottom of your thing. And then what people don't realize is that in the back end, you're flagged now and you're throttled. So they'll just make sure that basically no one sees the next thing you write, the next, you know, 50 things you write. No one sees it. That's how they play this game. I mean, this is a kind of high tech Soviet rewriting of discourse in real time. I mean, this is something that you would expect, honestly, in a totalitarian society. I mean, I know people would say you have other ways to communicate. Oh, OK, yeah, I could print a lot of leaflets and try to hand them out, but I don't think I'm going to be able to compete with the lockdowners who have Twitter and Facebook and Google doing all of their bidding. I don't think my leaflet handing out like it's, you know, 1778 or something is going to work that well.
It's funny that you mentioned the CDC with those little tags they put on everything. The CDC has been a disaster for 25, 30 years, right? I remember writing about this when, you know, years ago, more than a decade ago. The CDC is wrong constantly. The CDC said, I forgot what the number was, but like, you know, huge number of deaths were because of obesity. And then someone actually looked at the study and found that it was completely wrong. And only 20,000 people, not only, but 20,000 people died of obesity. And since then, they've been wrong about secondhand smoke. They're constantly wrong. They've become this sort of nannyistic institution rather than an institution of science in the way that people think about that. And yet, you know, we have to rely on them all the time. We're not like they're some kind of totalitarian institution that can never be wrong about anything. And just another thing that you mentioned about Facebook and not being able to talk. You know, everyone always mentions, if you mention Orwellian, they tell you, you know, that's the state shutting you down. But Orwell has a very famous essay where he talks about internalized censorship and how it's more dangerous when a society starts to not allow itself to debate anymore and talk about things. It's not just about the state. It's about the ability to debate issues and talk about them. And we're having a hard time doing that, I think, in society. If we had an easy time, Cuomo would be at 20% popularity in New York, not 70.
You know, we're speaking to David Harsanyi of National Review, nationalreview.com, for his latest. He's also an author of a book on firearms. And it made me think about this, David, because of the history of firearms in this country. Because isn't the CDC the institution that Democrats always want to study gun violence? As if like Fauci and his gang will come together like, you know, if we just don't point the guns in the wrong direction, everyone will be safe. I mean, like that, they actually do this kind of stuff, or they want to.
Well, first of all, it's a myth that the CDC doesn't study gun violence. The Obama administration set aside millions to let it study gun violence. And you know what that means, right? It's just the study of how bad guns are. And I will admit right now and concede that when someone shoots someone else, it's not a good thing and people are hurt by it. So I don't know about that. But what they want to do is say, like, people even owning guns psychologically hurts them or whatever they want to say. And the studies they have had are completely misleading. And when they had a study I forgot what year it was, but not that long ago, last decade, that showed that guns were actually something that people enjoyed and made them more, you know, believe in themselves more and feel better about their, you know, protection of their houses, and that it did more to help people protect their families than hurt their families. No one in the media even talked about that study. Do you know what I'm saying? It's completely selective what they highlight. And you know, so yeah, the CDC on guns is pretty much a joke. And by the way, when they say, you know, the CDC doesn't always do the study, sometimes they fund these institutions that do the studies. And that's what happened with that last one. It didn't get the outcome they wanted.
And just before I let you go, David, I saw that the Biden administration has been floating out there. They're going to do something on guns. I know you study this closely. I know you've got a book on guns. What do you think is going to happen?
No, is nothing new. And it's all kind of like all lies. Whenever someone says loophole for a Democrat, that just means there is no law there that they want a law to exist. It's not actual loophole. It just is a thing, right? It's like, you know, they say there is a loophole of people don't have to go through background checks, where there is no such loophole. There does not exist. They just want to make sure the family members can't give guns to their, you know, to their uncle or whatever for self, you know, for protection or whatever they want to use it for. But the other things like assault weapon bans and I forgot what else is in there. are not going to pass Congress. I'm positive of that. So he may try to do it through executive orders. I think assault weapon ban, if taken to the Supreme Court, would be found unconstitutional because it's simply about the aesthetics of a weapon, not very much to do with the actual deadliness and things like that. So I almost hope that they try it and see what happens. This is not a Supreme Court, I think. If Heller existed then, I don't think they'd have a better shot at it now, though I'm a little worried, would be a little worried about Roberts. But, you know, but I don't think they'll pass. We'll see.
David Harsanyi, NationalReview.com, for his latest piece. David, thanks so much.
Anytime. Thank you.
Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.